All right, ready to dive into a case that really shook things up. It's Kimura v. Municipal Court. You know, you wouldn't think housing inspections would be this big Supreme Court drama, but trust me, this one gets right into the Fourth Amendment and what it means for privacy, our privacy.
You know what's fascinating about Kimura? It's like it challenged how we even think about the Fourth Amendment, especially with these administrative searches. They seem so normal, but...
Right. Before Kimura, the Supreme Court was like, yeah, those warrantless administrative searches are fine,
yeah.
Like in that Frank v. Maryland case. But then Kimura comes along and totally flips the script. So it all starts in San Francisco, back in 1963. We've got Roland Kimura living on the ground floor of this apartment building. And get this, he's using the back of his apartment as like his main living space, which wasn't really allowed.
And that's where our city housing inspector comes in, ready to do his thing, you know, routine inspection, check for any violations. But here's the thing. Kimura says, nope, not coming in. Not once, not twice, but three times he refused entry.
Seriously, three times?
Three times. And why? Because the inspector didn't have a warrant.
Wow. Talk about standing your ground. I mean, I feel like most people would just let them in. It's like a normal thing, right?
You'd think so. But this is where it gets interesting. Kimura's refusal, it set off this whole legal battle that ended up changing how we understand the Fourth Amendment's reach. And because of this little act of defiance, he got hit with a violation, a city ordinance, Section 507 of the San Francisco Housing Code, to be exact. It basically made it a crime to refuse entry to those inspectors.
So it seemed like the city had this in the bag. I mean, they had the ordinance and those earlier Supreme Court decisions, like, they were on their side, right?
Yeah, the lower courts were all in for the city. They were leaning hard on that Frank v. Maryland precedent. But the Supreme Court, they saw this as something much bigger, a chance to rethink how the Fourth Amendment protected folks from, well, IL ulcers, not just those tied to criminal investigations.
And this is where it gets good. The Supreme Court actually sided with Kimura. And it was a close one, 5-4 decision, but still. It's amazing how a case about a housing inspection blew up into this huge constitutional issue.
Justice White wrote the majority opinion, and it was groundbreaking, really. He was basically saying the Fourth Amendment isn't just about when the police are trying to find evidence of a crime. It's about protecting everyone from unreasonable searches. Even if those searches are done for, you know, public safety or making things run smoothly for the government.
So no more free passes for housing inspectors, health inspectors, fire marshals, anyone doing those administrative searches. They all need a warrant now.
Well, not quite. The court knew these inspections were important, right? But they said to balance individual rights with the need for these inspections, you need a neutral party involved. So a judge, a magistrate, not the inspector, should decide if a search is actually necessary.
Yeah, that makes sense. Prevents those random searches or, you know, searches that target certain people unfairly. But what about probable cause? Isn't that usually for criminal cases? How do they apply that to these administrative searches?
That's where Kimura gets really interesting and clever. The court knew that traditional probable cause, the kind based on suspecting a specific person, didn't really fit these administrative searches. So what they did was they introduced this idea of reasonable legislative or administrative standards. It's like saying, okay, if a city can show that an area has a lot of code violations, they can use that to get warrants for a bunch of inspections, even if they don't suspect any specific person of doing anything wrong.
So it's like a broader probable cause covering an entire area, mm-hmm. not just focusing on one individual.
Exactly. It allows for those wider inspections that aim to keep everyone safe, but there's still some justification needed, some oversight. And it's not like inspectors got a blank check. The court was clear that getting these warrants shouldn't be a pain. The process should be simple.
It sounds like they were trying to find a good balance, right? Recognizing that the government have an interest in public safety, but also making sure individual rights aren't ignored.
Absolutely. They also knew that sometimes you got to move quickly, so they made an exception for emergencies, like fires or immediate safety threats, where getting a warrant would take too long and maybe put lives at risk.
So no warrant if there's a fire, but for those routine checks, a warrant is the way to go.
You got it. It's all about making sure that those routine intrusions into our homes and businesses aren't happening just because someone decided to do it.
This Kimura ruling is already a lot to take in. We've got the background, the arguments, how the court reasoned it out. But I've got a feeling this is just the beginning, right? The impact of Kimura must have been huge.
You're absolutely right. Huge impact. Kimura, it had this ripple effect, you know, practically every area where the government does those administrative searches. It felt it. It really flipped the script. Like before Kimura, those searches, they were considered okay, unless, you know, you could prove they were unreasonable. But after, switched. Warrantless administrative searches, they became presumptively unreasonable.
So the burden of proof, it shifted. It's on the government now. They've got to show why a warrantless search is okay rather than the person having to prove it's not okay.
Yeah.
It's a big change.
Big change. And oh boy, did it open the floodgates. Legal challenges to all kinds of inspections, OSHA, health departments, fire marshals, everyone. Karma set a serious precedent.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. How does Karma play out in real life? What about like those routine rental inspections landlords do? They need warrants for that.
That's a question everyone asks. And the answer is, well, it depends. Classic law, right? Courts have generally said those routine rental inspections are okay under Kimura as long as they're part of a reasonable system, you know, not targeting specific tenants because of some suspicion.
So a landlord can't just barge in whenever they feel like it?
Nope. There needs to be a clear policy applied fairly to everyone. And those surprise inspections some landlords like to do, some courts say they're okay, some don't, especially if it feels like they're being used to, you know, harass tenants.
So renters out there, if your landlord keeps showing up unannounced, maybe brush up on your Kimura rights, just in case.
Definitely. Now, another area Kimura pops up, and this one's a bit trickier, is those public health emergencies. Think COVID-19, those safety checks they were doing.
Oh, yeah. During the pandemic, remember all those arguments about masks, lockdowns, how far the government could go? Did Kimura come into play with those legal challenges?
Big time. Some businesses, some people, they argued that those COVID safety checks, you know, government officials doing them without a warrant, those were administrative searches. They said Kimura applies, you need a warrant. But the courts, they didn't all agree on this one.
I can imagine. It was a tough one. Any trends in how they decided?
Some courts sided with the government using that emergency exception in Kimura. You know, they said the pandemic was so serious, transmission risk so high, that going in without a warrant was justified to protect everyone.
But I bet there were people who thought those checks went too far.
Absolutely. Other courts agreed with those folks, saying even in a crisis, you can't just ignore individual rights. They said the government should still get warrants, even if, you know, the probable cause standard is adjusted because it's an emergency.
So is this back and forth between public safety and individual liberty with the courts trying to find that middle ground?
Exactly. And it shows how Kimura is still relevant, even with something as crazy as a global pandemic.
We've talked about homes, renters, even health emergencies. Let's switch gears, talk about workplaces. What about those OSHA inspections, you know, where they check for safety violations? Kimura apply there?
Oh, definitely. Workplace safety is another area where Kimura made a difference. The government, they have a big interest in making sure work is safe, right? And those OSHA inspectors, they play a key role. But thanks to Kimura, they can't just walk into any workplace unannounced.
So even when it's about potentially dangerous working conditions, those Fourth Amendment protections still matter.
That's right. But as always, there are exceptions. Let's say an OSHA inspector gets a tip, right? Workers exposed to hazardous stuff without protection. That kind of situation where there's a real threat, imminent danger, they might be able to go in without a warrant.
It sounds like it always comes down to finding that balance, keeping workers safe, but also respecting the employer's rights.
You got it. And it's the court's job to look at each case, all the details, all the circumstances, and decide, was that warrantless search really okay? Was it justified?
Okay, so we've covered rental inspections, public health checks, workplace stuff. What other situations are affected by Kimura?
Think about fire inspections. They seem pretty routine, right? Making sure buildings are safe, no fire hazards.
Totally. Why would a fire inspector need a warrant for that?
Because even though seemingly routine inspections can be a problem for the Fourth Amendment, courts have said, look, fire inspections are important, keep the public safe, but they still got to be done fairly within the law. Kimura sets that standard.
So they can't just single out a business they don't like or one that's in a certain part of town.
Right. There needs to be a real reason for the inspection, usually tied to a program that applies to everyone equally. Like maybe the city says all restaurants get inspected every 6 months, something like that.
Makes sense. Stops them from using the fire code to pick on certain businesses.
Exactly. And let's not forget, Kimura isn't just about businesses or homeowners. It kicks in anytime the government wants to go onto private property for, you know, administrative reasons.
So we're talking restaurants, health inspections, farms, environmental stuff, amusement parks, safety checks. The list is endless.
It is. And it all goes back to that basic idea of protecting people from the government just barging in. But Kimura, it's not a cure-all. There are limits.
How so? Are there times when those Fourth Amendment protections aren't as strong?
Well, Kimura focuses on administrative searches on private property. But what about searches in public places? Or if it involves government employees who aren't technically inspectors? Like, imagine a police officer walking through a park, sees someone acting kind of suspicious, goes up to them, starts asking questions. Is that a search under the Fourth Amendment? Does Khmer even matter?
That's a good point. When does a casual conversation become a search that needs a warrant? The line seems blurry.
It is. And courts have really struggled with this. Some say Khmer shouldn't apply to regular police work. Others say those Khmer principles about being reasonable, about protection from the government, just doing whatever they want, that should apply anytime the government's trying to get information about us.
So even after all these years, those debates Khmer started, they're still going strong.
Absolutely. And as technology changes, those debates are only going to get more complicated. Think about the digital world, our phones, social media, data being collected everywhere.
Yeah, that's a whole other level of Fourth Amendment stuff. We could do a whole other deep dive just on Khmer and the digital age.
We totally could. But for now, why don't we shift gears a bit? We've focused on the people who loved Khmer, but let's talk about those who didn't. The criticisms, the dissenting opinions. There were definitely some who weren't happy with what the court decided.
So it sounds like Khmer, even though it was about something as, I don't know, seemingly ordinary as a housing inspection, it really stirred things up legally. What were some of the big arguments from folks who weren't too happy about the court's decision?
Well, you can probably guess a lot of it was about practicality, efficiency. You know, some folks argued that these administrative searches, they're not the same as criminal searches. And forcing inspectors to get a warrant every single time, it would just be this huge mess, slow everything down, make it harder to do their jobs, you know, protect public safety, enforce the rules.
Yeah, that's a fair point, especially with stuff like fire safety or health inspections.
Mm-hmm.
Like, time is important there. Didn't the court address that in their decision, though?
Oh, they did, for sure. The majority in Khmer, they really emphasize that whole point about the Fourth Amendment, right?
Yeah.
It's there to protect us from the government just barging in no matter what. They said, look, making inspectors get warrants, it's not going to cripple these agencies. And protecting our privacy, that's worth a little bit of inconvenience, right?
Classic clash, isn't it?
Yeah.
Individual liberty versus the government's authority. And in Khmer, liberty won out.
You got it. But it was close, remember. 5-4 decision. Four justices didn't agree. And those dissenting opinions, they give us a whole other layer to think about, you know, the complexities of Khmer.
All right, let's hear about those dissents.
Yeah.
They often bring up interesting points, help us see things from a different angle. What were some of the main things those justices who disagreed with the majority, what did they say?
Well, one of the big ones came from Justice Clark. He thought the majority went too far, you know, didn't really think about the real-world consequences of making every single administrative search need a warrant. He was worried about those delays, the red tape, basically saying the solution might be worse than the problem itself.
So kind of a don't throw the baby out with the bathwater argument.
Uh-huh.
Did he offer any other ideas, ways to deal with it besides warrants?
Yeah, he was more for a flexible approach. Looking at each case specifically, he thought like, hey, warrantless inspections should be fine as long as they're part of a clear system, limited in what they cover, and someone's watching over them, making sure they're done right. Like finding that middle ground, protecting people's rights while letting the government do what it needs to do.
Trying to balance it all, protect privacy, but also let those government agencies function.
Exactly. But in the end, the majority didn't agree. They thought a more straightforward rule, you know, warrants for those searches, unless there's a real emergency, that was the best way to be fair and prevent those arbitrary searches they were so worried about.
It's interesting, isn't it, how these legal minds can look at the same issue and come to different conclusions. Really shows how complicated it can be to interpret the Constitution.
Totally. And Khmer, even though it was decided so long ago, those same debates, they're still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now with technology changing everything, facing all these new challenges to our privacy.
That's so true. We've talked about how Khmer affects those rental inspections, workplace safety, even public health emergencies. But what about now, the digital age? Khmer was decided way before the internet as we know it.
Yeah.
How does it hold up in a world of smartphones, social media, all that data being collected all the time?
That's the big question. And courts, legal scholars, they're all wrestling with it right now. The digital world, it makes us ask some really tough questions like, what even counts as a search according to the Fourth Amendment? Is it when the government looks at your emails, your browsing history, the location data from your phone?
It does seem a lot murkier than back when Khmer was decided.
Right. And it makes applying those Khmer principles so much harder. Some experts are saying, Kamara, the way it focuses on physically going into a space, it's outdated. We need a new version for the digital world. They think the government should have to get a warrant before looking at any of our personal data, even if it's stored on some company's servers or in the cloud.
That makes sense. If Kamara protects our homes, our businesses, shouldn't it protect our digital lives too?
Oh.
But I'm sure some people disagree, right?
Oh, for sure. There are folks who say if you need a warrant for every digital search, it would basically tie the government's hands, make it impossible to investigate crime, protect national security. They say, especially with cybercrime, terrorism, things move fast, law enforcement needs to be able to act quickly.
Same old tension, huh? Individual privacy versus the government's power, just playing out in this new digital world.
Yeah.
Any recent court decisions that give us a clue about how Kamara might apply in this new context?
There have been a few big ones lately that are interesting, like Riley v. California. The Supreme Court said, in general, police need a warrant to search a cell phone they take during an arrest. And in Carpenter v. United States, they decided the government needs a warrant to get cell phone location data from those wireless companies.
Sounds like a win for privacy. Does this mean the court is leaning towards, I don't know, a broader interpretation of Kamara for the digital age?
It's tough to say for sure. The court has been careful, you know, not making big sweeping statements about digital privacy in the Fourth Amendment. But these cases definitely show they're taking it seriously, thinking about those core Fourth Amendment ideas and applying them to new technology.
Sounds like the whole legal landscape around Kamara, how it applies to the digital world, it's still kind of up in the air, changing. It's definitely an interesting area to keep an eye on, and I'm sure we'll see more cases like Riley and Carpenter coming up.
I think so, too. It's a really dynamic area of law. It gets to the core of what it means to be free in a world where technology is changing everything so fast.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We looked at where Kamara came from, the legal arguments, what those who disagreed had to say, even how it plays into the digital world. Hopefully, our listeners have a better grasp of this landmark case and what it means for us today.
Me too. Always great to unpack these legal issues with you.
And to everyone listening, keep thinking about that balance, security versus freedom, especially as technology keeps changing so rapidly. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Kamara v. Municipal Court. Until next time, stay curious.